Welcome to the Claim Your Space podcast. I am your host, Belinda Aramidi, and I share my experiences as a multi-six-figure business owner and coach so that you too can learn how to build a business in alignment with how you want to live your life. If you're tired of hustle culture and ready to start saying yes to dreaming big and achieving even bigger, then this is the podcast for you. Hello, hello, hello. Thank you for joining me for another episode of the podcast. Today, I'm talking all about effective sales strategy, and I've actually planned it out, so I'm going to be doing a several-part series. I think moving into 2024, oh my gosh, over the next several weeks of episodes, I'm going to be focusing really heavy on sales. I think that is what we need right now. That is something that is going to be really helpful, and that's where my spirit is lying, so that's what we're doing. So today we're going to be going over kind of the basics, which for me is emails and direct messages, discovery calls / sales calls, and then sales presentations and negotiations. All of these tips, they're kind of like interchangeable. They really bleed into each other, and they are helpful really in any scenario or situation where you are selling something. So for instance, when I'm talking about presentation and negotiations, you know, maybe your sales process doesn't include like a final presentation because maybe you're not selling to corporate clients, but in the way that you are going to be presenting information, let's say on social media and trying to leverage social content and how it is that you're selling to people, then that understanding how to present in a sales context is going to be very helpful. So hopefully you will find all of this stuff super, super valuable. And with that, let's get into the episode. So the first quote unquote basic in the do's and don'ts of effective selling is email and DM selling. So for like really just at the crux of it, people like shorter conversations, like where they can quickly digest what is going on before you can start sending things that are more lengthy. And I want you to think of it from a logical and just an understanding perspective, right? You've got people who are really busy. We're making upwards of 35,000 decisions every single day. And then I've got your email. And now you want me to spend 5 minutes reading through your email. I don't know you. I don't know what this email is really about. You had some vague subject line to try and get me to open the email. And I'm unable to very quickly find out if what the email you've sent me is something that I need, right? You're making a shot in the dark when you're sending a DM or when you're writing an email that, hey, I have an inference, back to school science days, I have an inference that this person could use what it is that I offer. But if I have to take 5 minutes in order to figure that out, then you lose the opportunity. So that's why when it comes to DMs, they should be short always. Like across the board, no matter what happens, if you're sending a direct message, it should be short. I can't stand when people send me a really long direct message because that's just not how we communicate, right? So when it comes to DMs, I always suggest that people keep them short. When it comes to emails, especially the first one, it should be short-ish, right? You don't want it to be so short that the shortness of it makes it really vague, but you don't want it super long because again, I don't want to invest 5 minutes reading your email because I don't know you. I don't know you. I don't owe you anything. So you want it to be short, but I find that with emails and email correspondence, especially cold ones, you know, where you don't have an existing relationship, they can be just a smidge longer than what people expect in a direct message. When it comes to tone, I always tell people that you want to be courteous, but not overly friendly. And the reason why I say you don't want to be overly friendly is just like what I talked about a moment ago. I don't know you. So when you come off as really, really friendly and you're not feeding off of my energy, it is very neutral. It can come off as forced and disingenuous. I'm talking as someone who gets dozens of cold messages all the time, both direct messages and emails. And anytime anyone asks overly friendly, I become immediately suspicious. And, you know, it's not the same. It doesn't translate the same as when you meet someone who is really friendly in person. The example that I can give you of like an in-person interaction, there's someone who is friendly and warm and kind, and you can feed off of their energy. But then you've got that person who is like throwing themselves at you and is just all over you and you have no existing relationship. That is what it can feel like when you are overly friendly in you know, the way that you communicate. So I think that it is good to be courteous. It is good to maybe mention something that you think makes sense based on something that you have discerned from how it is that they present themselves on social media. But it's courtesy over being overly friendly until you've actually had an opportunity to speak to the person and you have a little bit of rapport built at that point. Another thing, because I just mentioned it, I get dozens and dozens of these messages all the time, and it's don't assault people's inboxes. I think people are so incredibly inconsiderate these days when it comes to email messages. I know that I signed up and I've since unsubscribed to someone's email. Like, they were putting on a 5-day challenge, and I kid you not, I probably get 5 emails from this person every single day ever since I signed up. And it is exhausting. It means I can't see anything else that is going into my inbox. And that's someone where I voluntarily gave up my email address. I have people who are sending me emails every single day for 2 to 3 weeks trying to get my attention. And I never ask them to be put onto any email list, okay? So I think that if you are going to reach out to someone cold, that you need to give a good 3, 4, maybe even 5 days of space in between email messages so that you don't assault their inbox, so that they can see other email messages from other people. Work on things like having a really solid subject line. Work on things like having a really solid body of your email that prompts people to want to reach out to you. But if you need to use just the sheer veracity of like how often you are emailing someone in order to get them to open your emails, I highly suggest that you take another approach to emailing, because literally every single person who I talk to who has an email that is where they get outreach from people who are trying to sell them things, they cannot stand when people send them email after email after email after email. Just don't. And the last thing that I suggest when it comes to emails and direct messages is show me that you've done some sort of research on me. So just like in the last episode where I talked about show me that you know me, in an email, I think that it's really important that you take the time to research the person that you are sending the email to. Long gone are the days, in my opinion, of sending out mass email, like you find as many emails that you can scrape off the internet and just, you know, set the world on fire. I think that it makes more sense from a strategic perspective and just from a good use of your time. It is better for you to send out 5 to 10 customized, tailored email messages a day to people that you want to do business with, or 5 to 10 custom, very focused direct messages where you're starting to initiate a conversation. By the way, I have my DM templates. So if you're looking for an effective way in order to be able to sell to people in the DM, download them. They're free. Those details will be down in the show notes below. But, you know, show people that you've taken the time to actually research them and their company, their business, or the company that they're working for, right? It really matters to people when they're skimming through an email and they see something that is so very clearly tailored for them. Imagine, you know, let's say you're a coach and you focus on helping moms deal with the stress of balancing working in a corporate career and also balancing all the stresses that come with being a mom. And let's say you're the chief information officer of a Fortune 500 company, and the subject line is enticing enough to get that CIO to open the email. And in the email, you say, hey, wouldn't it be so nice if your 3 girls, when they're doing their horseback riding lessons, they knew that their mom was fully present and in that moment. Do you know the impact that that would have on that person? But you can't have that kind of stop them in their tracks and freaking pay attention to what you just glossed over moment if you're not taking the time to show me that you know me and you're not taking the time to do the research into the person that you're sending the message to. So let's compare that. Wouldn't it be so great if your 3 girls, when you're bringing them to their horseback riding lessons, knew that their mom was there and in the moment 100%. There's that. And then there's, wouldn't it be great for you to have more time to focus on your kids' activities? What do you think is going to, again, stop the person in their tracks? When I was teaching people how to really leverage LinkedIn and create content that was really valuable, I always focused on, and I still do, on how are you going to get them to stop the scroll, right? How are you going to get them to not just stop the scroll of their thumb, but stop the scroll of their eyes? Because what we all do when we are confronted with a lot of information, when we look at an article and we're trying to decide if we want to read it all, is we skim, right? And so people are going to skim your email. And so you want to make sure that the thing that they land on, it is impactful and it is powerful. And how do you make something impactful and powerful if your goal is to send 100 emails instead of sending 10 really thoughtful ones? in my opinion and in my experience, is the ones that are thoughtful that make the most impact and end up giving you the most return on your time investment. So that's it. My email/DM tips, keep them short-ish, especially in that first correspondence. You want to be courteous, but not overly friendly. Don't assault people's email inboxes. Send honestly like one email a week. And if you can't convert in one email a week, like it's something else in the strategy. It's not how many times you're emailing. That is so like 2005. And then take the time to actually research the people that you're taking the time to send a message to or send an email to. The second thing I want to talk about is discovery/sales call. So I want to define this for anyone who is not, you know, used to sales jargon. So discovery call or a sales call is where, this is where I want to get semantic-y. Sometimes people misdiagnose when the actual quote unquote selling part of the conversation needs to happen. You can technically have a discovery call, which is you're going to discover more about the business, find out the intricacies, the things you can't find out without actually speaking to someone, those finer details. And then a sales call is where you are starting to position your product, service, or offer to the person that you're speaking to. Now, in the coaching world, the discovery call and the sales call can often happen all in one conversation. And that's fine. I'm not trying to change anyone or move things on. The one thing that I do want to change is forcing people to make a decision on that call. I think that is so gross. You guys are gross. If you are not a strong enough salesperson to not have to force someone to make a decision right now, you suck. But that's me. That is me. You shouldn't have to force anyone. I'm not saying you shouldn't try to close someone on that call. But what I am saying is you shouldn't force people to close on the call or they're going to miss an opportunity of a lifetime. It's very scarce mindset and I'm not into it, but it is what it is, especially for what people charge for coaching these days, including myself. I am not inexpensive and I am very proud of it. So anyways, so discovery calls, you're trying to gather information, trying to understand the person's business so you can make an assessment on whether or not you should even be selling to them in the first place. Right? Just because someone fills out a lead sheet and they want to work with you, you might not be the right person for them to work with because of something within their business, where they are in their business, the needs of their business, or even them from like a personality perspective. It's just not going to jive. So some things that you can do to really set the tone when it comes to your discovery/sales calls, depending on what you want to call them, is you want to set the agenda at the beginning of the call. So let's say you're like me and a lot of your conversations, you are having them over Zoom. And the thing that you're doing is, you know, you sit down and you have all your nice to say, hey, how are you? Where are you located? So on and so forth. You might want to like, you know, honestly chit chat for a couple of minutes, just, you know, kind of getting to know each other a little bit. And so after you've done that, I will literally say, okay, all right, great. Well, in the interest of time, I want to make sure I know that we've got 30 minutes set aside for this conversation. This is what I'm hoping that we will be able to accomplish today. Boom, boom, boom. Three things that you want to get out of the conversation. And then you ask for the person's buy-in and you say, does that sound good to you? They'll either say yes or no, or even better, they will add to it. Say, actually, I was also hoping that we could do X. Now, you might not be able to do what they want on the call, but you want to be able to hear it because what you can then do once they say it. So you said, oh, well, actually, I was hoping we could go over some colors for our new fall campaign. And you can say, hey, that's great. I'm so excited that you're eager to do that. I don't think that we're going to have enough time to be able to do that on this call, but I'm writing it down in my notes to make sure that we can set aside. We can maybe at the end of this schedule out time for us to be able to talk about that next week. How's that sound to you? Right? Because what that does is it shows respect for what it is they said. It shows that you're listening, but it also allows you to stay in control of the conversation. They might ask something relatively simple and you're like, yeah, absolutely. We can spend some time towards the end of the conversation talking about that. I have no problem, right? For instance, they can bring up financing. They can say, hey, you know, I really love everything that we're doing. $25,000 is a steep investment for me. Do you think, you know, we can talk about payment options? And you can say, absolutely. I always like to talk about that in these conversations. So no problem. We'll save a few minutes towards the end to do that. Okay. And then you can go into the conversation. They know what they're prepared for. And you've, more importantly, taken command of the conversation. So many times, I actually dealt with a client who dealt with this a couple weeks ago. And I can't remember if I mentioned this in last week's podcast or not, but some of my clients actually work with their employees. And so one of my client's employees, he was telling me about a presentation that just like went awry, you know, and it was because he didn't set the tone at the beginning of the conversation. And so what you want to do is you want to, I hate this word, but it is the only one that's coming to mind right now, but you want to train the people that you're doing business with to understand that you are in control when it comes to this context. And it's a very, I find, calm, soothing, chill way to make sure that the conversation is respectful of your time, respectful of their time, and you actually get out of the conversation what you need in order to make the decision that is right for you. Okay? So set the agenda at the beginning of the call. Come prepared with your questions, okay? That this is really important because then it prevents the I don't know, especially if you're someone where you don't necessarily feel confident in these scenarios. You want to come prepared with questions. And I suggest that you come prepared with anywhere between like 5, at most 10, okay? And this is why. Because you want the conversation to feel just like that. A conversation and not an interrogation, not an informal New York Times interview, but instead an actual conversation. So when you have fewer questions, you allow for you to kind of build on the things that the person who is speaking to you, like what it is that they're saying, right? So I've learned this in some interviews that I've been doing over the last few months where I ask a question. I'm really listening and paying attention to what it is that they're saying. And I've been able to leverage this skill of taking a point. Like I will ask a sales-related question, they'll say something, and then my next question isn't question number two on my list. It's a question that I now have because I've gotten piqued curiosity based on something that they said while they were answering my question. And so I find that when you have too many questions, instead of focusing on being in the moment and in the conversation, you're focused on just making sure that you ask all of your questions, okay? But do come prepared with questions because it just lowers the temperature and takes the pressure off. And then also as a side note, when it comes to questions, absolutely take notes. So you can handle this in a couple of ways. When you're setting the agenda at the beginning of the call, you can ask permission to do two things. Like, I wouldn't ask permission to take notes. This is a statement. So you say, hey, Jan, I just want to let you know if you see me looking down and jotting some notes or you hear me clicking on my keyboard, I am totally paying attention. It's just that I like to take notes so that I don't forget anything from our conversation. So that's just making a statement when it comes to making notes. If you want, you can ask the person if it would be okay for you to record the conversation. But this, you absolutely do need permission. Don't go recording people and not telling them. It's just rude. And people have their reasons for why they may or may not want to be recorded, including company policies. So come prepared with questions and make sure that you take notes. And I find that recording conversations can allow you to not have to necessarily focus on like taking notes. You can just focus on it being a conversation. But again, you do you, boo. The next thing, ask questions that will help you understand both their needs and how they think slash make decisions. So as you're formulating what questions you want to ask, the goal of any question is to help unwrap something, right? So let's say, for instance, we'll use the CIO example, the chief information officer example that I was using previous to this. You can ask the chief information officer, okay, so tell me a little bit about ABC Tech, right? Okay, that's a fair question. However, how is that question going to help you assess the need of, does this woman need a coach who's going to help her balance life as a corporate boss and life as being the head of her household? As a mom and running the show, you have to ask yourself, how is this question helping me understand whether or not this person actually has a need for working with me? So those are the kinds of questions that you want to ask. You want to ask open-ended questions. So you don't want to just ask a question like, are you working full-time? Right? They can answer yes or no. Am I working full-time? Yes. Am I working full-time? No. A better question might be, what has been your experience working as a full-time mom? You see the difference in that question is it gives them the floor to help me understand what their world is like, right? Questions are there to help turn on the light in a room so you can actually see the stuff that's in it, right? Or a magnifying glass to help you see something that is really small and you're trying to uncover it, okay? And then the other part that I mentioned is that you want to ask questions that help you understand how they think and how they make decisions. So, for instance, I might ask a client, working with a coach is a really, really big decision. There is personality involved, and there's also trust. You know, typically when you're making decisions that will have a major effect on how the business is going to operate, as well as how you're going to interact with your team, you know, how do you make those decisions? How do you feel comfortable moving forward and making that next step? How you ask that question is really important. How you're building rapport is really important. But flat out asking, how do you make decisions? Another great question to ask is, this is me on a sales call. I'm like, look, I'm not someone who likes to force people to make a decision right here on the call. I understand that this is a big decision, not just from a financial perspective. It's a big decision on time as well. When it comes to deciding how you want to move forward, are you someone who likes to take a week? Do you like to take a month? You know, is there any additional information that you need that is going to help you decide whether or not us moving forward is the right decision for you? But just ask. But it's really, really important that you do ask the question around how is it that they make decisions. And then lastly, this is a little more important on the corporate side. In this next episode, I am going to be talking about, you know, more advanced sales for people who are trying to get into that corporate space, but understanding what the buying process is. So for some people, they very well may go to their significant other and ask them their thoughts on what it is that they're doing. And so it's good for you to understand that, right? Because now if I ask, I said, hey, you know, so after you get off this call, you know, who are going to be a couple of people you're going to talk to about whether or not you're going to move forward in this decision? And I make it very playful. I make it very chill. This is not an interrogation. It's supposed to be a very calm conversation. And they might say, you know what? I'm going to call my best friend because she's like my sounding board. And then I'm also going to talk to my husband because, you know, this is obviously going to take away some time away from, you know, our personal time, us being able to work together, me working on some of the things you're doing, so on and so forth. And then I'll be like, okay, great. What do you think your husband's going to ask, right? And then she's going to tell me. And then I'll be like, all right. And your best friend, who's your ultimate sounding board? We love her. What are some things that she's going to ask? Because what's going to happen is they're the things that your prospect is going to be caring about. And then there are going to be the things that their core like confidants are going to be pressing them on. And you want to make sure that you empower them with the information that they need. So if they say, well, my best friend is going to be thinking about, you know, whether or not you're going to be having me up at like 5 a.m. in the morning, then now you can talk about things like what time your coaching calls happen. Because if you're someone who forces your people, not forces, but if you're the kind of coach where your slots are only available at 5 o'clock in the morning, then you've got an issue. You've got a potential objection. And now you can find out it early so you can figure out how you want to maneuver or just let the person know, I don't think this is going to be a good fit. And when it comes to the husband, you know, you're going to find out again from the prospect. What is the husband going to say? What is the potential red flag they're going to raise? And you're going to empower the prospect to be able to say, oh, well, this is what we talked about, actually, so on and so forth. And the same thing goes with corporate. You want to know who could be the secret person who's going to prevent you from making the deal move forward. So that's discovery and sales calls. Set the agenda, come prepared with questions, ask questions that help you understand the person's needs and how they make decisions. And then ultimately, you want to also understand in the discovery sales call phase, what their buying process is and who else is involved with giving it a thumbs up or a thumbs down. Lastly, let's talk about presentations and negotiations. As I mentioned at the top of the episode, I understand that not everyone does presentations, but being able to present and being able to negotiate is something that is really, really important. Whether or not it's formally in your process is a moot point, because if you are in business, you will be presenting and negotiating all the time, okay? When it comes to presentations, they should be customized, always. So you don't always have, you can have like a basic template of the information that needs to be in there. Absolutely, that's fine. But you should be taking the information that you learned in the discovery call and putting it into the presentation so that the person can see, wow, you weren't just listening in that moment. You weren't just taking notes to look busy, but you actually heard me. And that's why I said that it's really important that you take notes when you are in a discovery call. So you can then take that information. It's really good to, as much as possible, get the exact wording that they said and put it into your presentation or mention it in the presentation. So you can say, you know what, Jan, when we were talking, you said that your best friend would be worried that I'd be having you up at the crack of dawn to be able to do these coaching calls. And so I want to share with you exactly what it's like to be able to book in for a coaching session with me and my team, right? So now you show that you were listening and you're able to deal with the objection in the presentation and within negotiation. You also, when you're presenting, you want to ask questions during the presentation that helps you judge the temperature of the room, right? So you want to do things like ask, hey, we've covered a lot, and then ask maybe a specific question about something. So you can say, let's say, for example, one of my clients in logistics, you can ask a question very specific to, you know, I shared some of our warehouse points around the country. You know what, XYZ company, I know that warehouse space is really important to you. Do you see any of our warehouse locations that would be a crucial hub for you and your shipments coming in from China? And so now you get to put them on the spot, make sure that they're paying attention. If not, you get to reiterate a point that you know is important to them, but you can reiterate it and make sure that they're actually paying attention again. But then it's, you know, if you're in a presentation and people aren't really clicked in, they're not really paying attention to what is going on, then you can, and I've done this, I do this a lot in corporate. I'm like, you know what? It doesn't seem like everyone is really plugged in. Doesn't make sense for us to table this conversation for another day when maybe, you know, there aren't some unforeseen things going on in the background, you know, but you always want to be able to, when you are presenting and ultimately when you're negotiating, that you are really focused and tuned in to the people that are in the room, the people that are having a conversation with you, and that you are arming yourself with the information from the discovery call, the things you've learned about them, and you're putting them into presentation form, or you're adding them into the negotiations so that they really feel like, okay, this person understands me and my needs. Using this 5 a.m. example that I keep mentioning about that client, it's really important that you can say in the negotiations, you know what, I know that when we first spoke, I mentioned that it'd be $25,000 for us to work together. In order to accommodate you not being able to work at my typical time at 5 a.m. in the morning, you'll notice that the proposal is actually for $26,500 because I have to negotiate some things and move them within my schedule in order to accommodate. I hope you can understand, right? So negotiation is being willing to meet people where they are, but also letting them know that if there are certain changes that need to happen, explain and help them understand why it's happening in the first place. So there you have it. Those are some of the basics when it comes to, you know, effective selling, selling in the email and with DMs, discovery calls, and then presentations. As I mentioned before, in the next episode, we're going to continue on and we're going to talk about advanced sales strategy, selling to corporate clients. So if this is something that you want to do and you haven't done it already, or if this is something that you are doing, but you want to be more effective at it, I hope that you'll stick around for that episode. But until then, as always, I hope that you found this episode useful or helpful in some way. I've got to jet off to a meeting, so I'll talk to you later. Bye.